Okay, if I can get everyone's attention, I'd like to welcome you to our third biological sciences session of the meeting. Thank you. So this is our third session. Those of you that were at the last session, we had quite a lively discussion, and I anticipate that we'll continue to have lively discussions. I'll just remind the speakers to stay fairly close to the microphone and to repeat questions so that the tape can pick it up for other people that are going to be watching that or listening to this. So our next talk is by Perry Marshall, who is an electrical engineer by training and also business. And he is the CEO of Natural Code LLC, and he's going to be, as an accomplished author, including a book he's got a copy of, he'll show you, I think. And he's going to be talking about extended evolutionary synthesis as replacement of neo-Darwinism. So looking forward to this. Thank you.
Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming. Appreciate it. My name is Perry Marshall. I'm from Chicago. I wrote the book Evolution 2.0, Breaking the Deadlock Between Darwin and Design. And in November, I went to London for a conference called New Trends in Evolutionary Biology, Biological, Philosophical, and Social Science Perspectives. And this was really a three-day conference on the extended evolutionary synthesis. And many, if not most, people who presented at the Royal Society at that conference believe that neo-Darwinism needs to mostly be jettisoned and a few pieces of it can be salvaged, and that you really need a significantly different teleological model of evolution. And the political significance of this meeting was, a lot of these people would describe themselves as members of the Third Way. The Third Way is a group of scientists founded by Jim Shapiro and Dennis Noble that says, we're not creationists, we're not intelligent design guys, and we're also not neo-Darwinists. And I felt like Forrest Gump, because there was a number of old-fashioned neo-Darwinists at the meeting, and they were backpedaling. And I've never seen that happen before. And this is the first time that the redheaded stepchildren actually got center stage and had a chance in a major scientific venue to present their views. And so I'm gonna give you, and it's probably the Perry version, okay, but what I perceived to be the major points of the conference. So let's start with some definitions. Neo-Darwinism, the theory of evolution as expounded later by students of Charles Darwin, especially Wiseman, holding that natural selection accounts for evolution and denying the inheritance of acquired characters. And I'll add a couple nuances to this. The Cal Berkeley webpage says, mutations are random. The mechanisms of evolution, like natural selection, genetic drift, work with the random variation generated by mutation. And the point being, they're making the specific point that it's random. Daniel Dennett in Darwin's Dangerous Idea said, you'll get evolution anytime you have three things: variation, heredity, and replication, and three, differential fitness. Now, when I went down the evolution rabbit hole 13 years ago, and my younger brother almost became an atheist after being a missionary in China, we ended up having this debate, and I didn't know. And I had never studied this. And I said, well, I'm an electrical engineer. I know how to read a scientific paper. I'm going to go down this rabbit hole. And the first question I asked myself was, I studied control systems and communication systems, and I learned how to optimize lots of things. Why didn't they ever teach me replication, variation, and selection as means of optimizing control systems and communication systems in electrical engineering? I never heard a word of it. Well, is it true? And I went down the rabbit hole, and it proved to be much more interesting than I ever imagined that it would be. And I didn't find the answers that I expected that I was going to find. But I can tell you this. The idea that random mutation and natural selection and time is all you need for evolution does not exist in electrical engineering. It does not exist in software development. It does not exist in analog or digital signal processing. It does not exist in networking or computation or control systems theory or communication theory. And I have never had anybody counter what I'm saying to you successfully. There's also no model in mathematics, statistics, or probability that says that this works. And here are the problems. These things are necessary but insufficient for evolution. In engineering, no system is optimized this way. It violates Claude Shannon's principle of information entropy because random mutation is noise, and noise always destroys signals. And all observable, empirical evolutionary changes in biology and genetic algorithms and engineering and business and culture evolve via highly structured, coordinated ergodic patterns. And so I started looking for, well, it looks like evolution is true, but the way they're explaining it is wrong, as far as I can tell. So what's missing? Well, let's just understand that any theory of evolution, whatever it may be, is a theory of engineering. It's a theory of how you get complex interactive systems to do interesting things. And so the question on the table is, can neo-Darwinism be repaired, or does it have to be rubbished entirely and we need to start over with a new model? And this was the question that was being asked at the Royal Society. Well, so I'm going to describe to you, I'm going to call it a strong extended evolutionary synthesis, which says you have to essentially start over. You have to go back to before the modern synthesis. You have to go back to what Darwin had, which was better than the modern synthesis. And then you need to add genetics, and then you need to incorporate the work of a whole bunch of people who were ignored and treated very badly from the 1920s onward. Natural genetic engineering replaces randomness, which is cell-mediated edits of DNA in response to what's going on in the environment. And James Shapiro has elaborated on this extensively, done lots of work on this. Dennis Noble, who organized the conference there, says organisms actively harness stochasticity or randomness. They are not merely passive victims of it. So he uses an example of a one-armed bandit, like a slot machine with the fruit spinning, and you hold this fruit constant and this fruit constant, and you only rotate the third one until it gets you past the goal. And that's really a much better idea of how evolution actually works. Schrodinger, in 1944, coined the term negentropy to describe that organisms, for all practical purposes, seem to reverse entropy. And the first popular book on systems biology is The Music of Life by Dennis Noble. And so I want to describe to you the key components of the extended synthesis. And I conceptualize them as a Swiss Army knife of all of these different tools that are possessed by cells. The first one is epigenetics. One of the leading people is Eva Yablanka from Israel. And epigenetics says that in response to the environment, your body can gray out or silence genes or switch other genes on and off, enabling you to deal with hot or cold or calluses or whatever. And furthermore, that those changes in some cases can be passed directly to your offspring, to your children and your grandchildren. And we know that this happens. And Lamarck believed this 200 years ago. He was violently ejected from the academy. He was explicitly excluded from the neo-Darwinian synthesis. And it turns out that he was right all along. Blade number two is transposition. Barbara McClintock in 1944 found out that if she damaged corn maize, the plant would repair its own genome so that it could reproduce. It took pieces of other chromosomes and patched together code that had never existed before and went on to reproduce. And they thought she was crazy, and she went underground with her work, and 40 years later, she won the Nobel Prize. Horizontal gene transfer is a lot of what's going on when bugs turn into superbugs. Bacteria can go borrow genes from other places. They can figure out pieces of code that they can use. They insert it, they use it, they share it with their bacteria friends. Major mechanism of evolutionary high-speed change. Number four, interspecies hybridization. I can take two species, mate them together, double the number of chromosomes, get a new species. For example, emmer wheats plus goat grass gives you modern wheat. Or donkey plus horse equals mule. Most of the time, the mule will be sterile. But in some cases with animals, you will get a fertile offspring, which is a new species, and you get it immediately. And this is a major step in the evolutionary tree multiple times throughout history. Symbiogenesis, which could be eukaryotic cell plus algae equals plant cell with chloroplast. And there have been lots of symbiogenesis experiments in real time that have actually worked. Our mitochondria, so far as we can possibly tell, are symbiotic bacteria with their own DNA. So it's cellular mergers. It's like having a Starbucks in a Marriott hotel. Viruses and retroviruses. This is an endogenous retrovirus where the virus violently and not with permission injects DNA into the genome of another creature, but later the creature finds ways to use that code and adapt it to something that it needs. It appears that the mammalian placenta was built from code taken from a virus. Niche construction. This is a picture of a beaver dam. The beaver creates the environment that it needs, and then all of the other evolutionary mechanisms further the purposes of that niche until it can completely dominate the niche. And as a business consultant, I can tell you that we do this in business all the time. Now, what Richard Dawkins and the selfish gene and all of his friends did was they turned blind, purposeless, and that was the whole point. The whole point of their thing is that it's purposeless and random, and they turned it into a dogmatic pop religion. And this was really what the extended synthesis was rejecting. The neo-Darwinian synthesis of the 1940s certainly achieved some worthwhile things, and in some respects it was a step forward, but in other steps it was actually a step backward from Darwin's original theories. And I contend that the random mutation assertion of neo-Darwinism is the biggest mistake in the history of science. It's not true. I've been debating this for 13 years. I've never had anybody prove to me that a major evolutionary step was random. You can't prove randomness. That's part of the problem. I don't dispute at all that there's a random element to it. But the point is, and Dennis Noble really makes this point in his book, Biological Relativity, that the organisms harness the randomness and then hijack it for their own purposes. And the extended synthesis fixes a lot of the problems that many people have brought up about evolution. I mean, I would say that neo-Darwinian evolution is the most troubled theory in the history of science. It's never been without problems. It's never been able to rest. There's always these cracks that people are trying to fix. It focuses on empirical real-time evidence as opposed to stringing a bunch of bones together and then trying to tell a story from them anecdotally. Okay, how did we get this cell to evolve? How did this bug become a super bug? How did we get from emmer wheats and goat grass to modern wheat? What were the steps? It is explicitly teleological. And I loved Seigart's presentation a few hours ago about teleology. Frankly, I think the banishment of teleology from biology is one of the most egregious examples of denial that I've ever seen. I mean, it's like the alcoholic family that doesn't want to admit that dad's a drunk. It's obvious that living things are purposeful. And it's not just an artifact of our language. Human language is very good at identifying good, valid, and new things when they exist. But when you can't come up with language for things that are almost purposeful but not quite, it kind of tells you that maybe the purposeful things are just actually purposeful. Like, hello, can we just accept it? And yeah, I know it raises questions, but see, that's the good part. Now, I also think I'm not an intelligent design guy. Like, I debated Stephen Meyer a few months ago on a podcast. And the ID guys raise a lot of objections to evolution, and a lot of the objections are valid. But the extended synthesis addresses them, I think, quite nicely. And it's also compatible with the idea that life is purposeful, and we don't have to pretend that it's not. And then it raises many more questions. I think the best one of all is this one. Barbara McClintock said this in her Nobel Prize paper in 1984, and she did not say this by accident. She said, "What does a cell know about itself?" Now, that question right there makes a lot of people squirm. Well, deal with it. I mean, watch the white blood cells chase the germs in a YouTube video, and you tell me, is there something purposeful going on here? How do cells know how to evolve? Now, I own a software company, I've been in technology, I'm an electrical engineer, I've consulted in 300 industries. Nobody knows how to write software as well as a bacteria does. A bacteria can do better software in 12 minutes than a team of Google engineers can do in 12 weeks. So what does that thing know that we don't? How directional is evolution? I have no idea. I really don't. But it's somewhat directional, that's for sure. How can we design systems that self-evolve? Because right now we can't. If Neo-Darwinism was true, Bill Gates would not need employees. He would get 10 million servers and run a genetic algorithm, and it would churn out new versions of Windows every few months without anybody touching the keyboard. I don't know of any software company that works that way, but we can watch cells do it in real time. We can watch them do it in 30 minutes. So what do they know that we don't? What is the difference between biology and computation? They're different. They are not the same thing. They are related. Biology does computation. There's a book by Landweber called Evolution as Computation. Very interesting book. Where does information come from? Where does life come from? Paul Davies, how many of you know who he is? Famous physicist. He invited me to speak in Tempe, Arizona at Arizona State University, August 28 at the Beyond Lecture Series. And it is at that event that I'm doing my official announcement of the Evolution 2.0 Prize. Right now, it is a $3 million prize for Origin of Information or Chemicals to Code. We're raising the amount, and I'll announce a larger amount at ASU. And may the best man win. We're seeking to patent that. I think that question is either bigger than Google or more enduring than Aristotle. But what we're not going to tolerate anymore is just-so stories about lucky lightning strikes and worm ponds and, you know, people pretending to know something that nobody knows the answer to. And I think it's a very worthwhile question, and, you know, maybe one of you will solve it. But you're all invited if you want to come to ASU on August 28th. So we got 10 minutes for questions.
Is this available online? Will you be available online?
We're going to live stream it. It should be on my Facebook page, 2.0.evolution. So if you can find the Evolution 2.0 page on Facebook, and you can also go to cosmicfingerprints.com and get 3 free chapters of the book. Yes?
Can you talk a little more about you can't prove randomness?
Gregory Chaitin wrote a paper where he proved that you cannot prove randomness. It is impossible. So I could give you any string of letters, right? You could make them up. You could get them from a USB drive or anything. There's no way to prove that a string of characters is random. You can prove that it's not random. And what the last 50 years of molecular biology have proven is that, number one, cells militantly guard against random copying errors with 3 stages of error correction. And secondly, that they deal with threats and damage and evolutionary adaptation in explicitly non-random patterns. Okay, so anytime somebody says that evolution is random, number one, they're making not only an unscientific statement, but an anti-scientific statement, because all inquiry stops. Because randomness is the end of the road. You're done. You don't have any more explanatory framework once you've said, oh, that's random. It's not a scientist's job to do that. It's abdication. And I believe it has set back disease and cancer and biology and physiology 50 years that this is accepted as science, because it's just not science at all. Yes, Randy.
Oh, yeah, Perry. Thanks for setting that up. I just have to go on record. You and I are friends for many years.
Yes, we are.
And as we said, I really think you have a fundamental misunderstanding of randomness there. There's not enough time to correct that, but randomness is an essential part of the process, and none of the 5 blades of your switchblade and Swiss Army knife are opposed to randomness.
They harness randomness. They harness it.
Concept that you said in terms of reproduction, randomness, and variation still exists despite everything you said. All of your blades are correct in the sense that it shows a higher level and sophisticated type of randomness. It doesn't replace it. But
so I would just recommend, thank you, Randy, and fine that you have that objection. Dennis Noble's book, Dance to the Tune of Life, Biological Relativity, gives a very useful framework for the relationship between randomness and the structure, and he does a better job of articulating it than I do in my book. So, yes, sir?
Do you think that radioactive decay is random?
Yes, and you can't prove it, but it does pass all the smell tests.
You observe it, right?
Well, so it causes mutations, but it doesn't cause beneficial mutations.
But are those mutations random?
Well, yes, but that doesn't explain why you get evolution. The only way you explain evolution is figuring out things like what Barbara McClintock did. She figured out what the plant did in response to what and why, what the chemical signals were, and what the plant was trying to do. Now, if you say those jumping genes just jumped around randomly, you pull the rug out from all of her work. and you skip doing a whole bunch of work that you need to do. So I agree, white noise on my TV set is random, even though I can't prove it. Totally accept that. But white noise does not create evolutionary steps. It does not. And it's and the blades of the Swiss Army knife, which this stuff, some of it goes back to the 1920s, and there's a ton of stuff starting in the 60s that shows that these steps are not random. Next, you, yes.
Could you compare and contrast your meaning when you use random versus stochastic?
I don't make any particular distinction between those two terms.
So a reasonable metaphor for stochasticity is that there's a drunk guy in an alley, and he's headed toward the other end of the alley. He's going to make it in the story.
Okay.
But he bumps against the walls of the alley. We don't know what path he's going to take to get there, but we don't know the exact path, but he will arrive there.
Don't misunderstand me for advocating some kind of determinism or some kind of omniscience on the part of the organism or the cell. I think that organisms evolve essentially the same way jazz evolves, or the same way business evolves, or the same way technology evolves, which is that kind of smacking back and forth against the sides of the alley and trying different things and going down blind alleys. But there is still a goal, and it is still teleological. And maybe the guy is drunk, and maybe the guy's an Olympic athlete, and he's totally sane, but he doesn't know everything. And so it really changes the texture of evolution itself. And I think it's far more true to real life. Next. Yes?
Could you comment on retroviruses, human endogenous retroviruses particularly? I've heard rumors that there have been no human endogenous retroviruses inserted in the human genome in the last 30,000 years, and also that those that are in the genome are closely associated with brain development.
I don't know, but this woman does viruses, so maybe after we're done here, maybe she could. I don't know. I really don't. Who else? Wow, you guys are really calm and sedate. I thought I would really. Yes, Sai.
So I think your discussion of randomness comes across a little differently than what I think you mean.
Okay.
And correct me because I may be wrong. But what I think I hear you saying is that evolution does not depend on a random change, which then gets selected for, exclusively. But instead, as you quote Noble, randomness certainly exists in biological variation.
Yes.
And the cell uses it and thereby transforms it to a non-random process.
Yes.
And the cell is using that originally random event, but making it completely non-random because it's using it in the way that works for natural selection.
That is exactly what I'm saying. And it's not some linguistic trick. Like, if you go down to the lowest levels of physics, there really are molecules banging around randomly. But evolution, random mutations are not a Brownian noise walk in random space. They're just not. So I think we have about 1 minute.
Oh,
yeah.
And was this November 2016 meeting reported in the scientific literature?
Barely. It was right the same time as the election. I actually think that 100 years, it was a major inflection point in biology. There's no question about the cat is out of the bag. I think in 100 years, that meeting will prove to have been more important than the election. It was a big deal. It was a very big deal. The cat is out of the bag. And you're going to see a sea change in what comes out in the evolutionary literature in the next 5 years. Can I do that, Guy?
You can. So you went on the election. Well, what that means is that people didn't notice it, but it must have been reported. Because I've been looking for that, where Science or Nature or some peer-reviewed magazine would report on that.
Carl Zimmer wrote a not very good report about it, and that was it. The Discovery Institute wrote some stuff about it. I wrote a report about it, but it was almost completely ignored. And I'll just add, there was quite a political fight to get that meeting to happen. And they had to get the British Academy involved, and then they got it to happen. And there's some people, the Jerry Coins of the world are not happy about this, but, oh well. Huh?
You think it's being squelched?
Well, they hate, the neo-Darwinists hate this. They absolutely hate it. But my time's up. So thank you, everybody. Appreciate it.